for the first time since 2015, there's a lot of things that stick with you. And Carlos Mendoza, who we commended 24 hours ago, we put him over, we complimented him, outmanaged Pat Murphy, trusted Luis Severino, all the great stuff that he did in Game 1. I thought he had a very rough night in Game 2. I think a lot of Met fans have different things they're angry about. I will tell you the one thing I'm angry about. The one thing that I am pissed about.
Go ahead.
Was pissed about and pissed about. Taking Sean Manaea out, didn't have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
Going to Reed Garrett, didn't have a problem with that. Going to Ryan Stanek, didn't have a problem with that. Even going to Phil Maton in the eighth inning. I would have preferred to go with Edwin Diaz. I prefer it. Try to get three outs in the eighth inning and go to someone else in the ninth inning. You're not asking for two innings from Edwin. I understand that.
Mm-hmm. That's the one I'm surprised you're not upset about.
I'm not upset.
Because we talked about it yesterday.
Yeah, I'm not upset, but it's one of those things where I get it, but this is what I would have done differently. Okay. There's two different types of first guesses. There's the, I get it, I would have done this differently, and then there's the raging mad, this makes no sense, garbage. So, yes, I would have gone to Diaz in the eighth inning, seeing if he got those outs against the top of the batting order. But the thing that pissed me off that there's no good answer for is when Phil Maton gives up a game-tying home run to my twin Jackson Chourio, and then he gives up a base hit to Blake Perkins, and then William Contreras hits a ball hard for a double play.
Yeah,
I know, you know, the whole world knows Phil Maton doesn't have it.
Right.
Get his ass out the game.
Right. He's getting hit too hard.
You're tied.
Right.
The Mets aren't losing. He's tied. You have to get him out of the game. And I get that the options then weren't great. Danny Young, Adam Ottavino. Trust me, I know those aren't great options, but those are better options than a guy who's cooked. And Phil Maton, based on all the work he's had the last couple of days, he looked cooked. And it was managing malpractice for Carlos Mendoza in a tie game after being in the gift from the gods that Maton got the double play to keep him in the game. And then he gives up a base hit to Adames ahead of the count, and he still keeps him in the game. And that's, of course, when Garrett Mitchell hit the game-winning home run. That, to me, Tiki,
right.
That's what pissed me off.
Right, because you didn't recognize that your guy was in trouble.
Yes.
That Maton, as you mentioned, just didn't have it. But I imagine it's challenging for Mendoza as he's in that moment, thinking about how this game hasn't gotten away from you because it's a tie ball game, but you're also simultaneously thinking about game three.
Yes.
And so that's the challenge. And I can't tell you what's right or wrong. I mean, I didn't play Major League Baseball at a high level, so the strategy that works and tested over time and anecdotally has worked in previous instances, I can't point to. But I get it, to him, it's probably just gut because he's done that a lot. Like, what am I doing? Am I trying to win this game right now? We're not hitting, so I don't think we're going to score. Or do I'm protecting my bullpen for potentially a humongous game tomorrow?
Well, that's why I wouldn't have suggested once the game was tied going to Diaz for that exact reason. But yeah. I would have gone to somebody else. And even if that somebody else is a Danny Young or Adam Ottavino.
After he struggled.
Yeah, after it was clear Maton, I got to keep the game tied.
Yeah.
Because here's the other reason why the game being tied is really, really important. And this was another small area where the Mets lost last night. Very small area, but it's important. Devin Williams is the Brewers closer. He's electric. He's amazing. Make him pitch a lot.
Yeah.
He threw seven pitches last night, or whatever it was. It was a small number. And so if you can keep that game tied and bring Devin Williams into a tie game in the ninth inning, not only is it a possibility that maybe you get to him, but maybe Pat Murphy, in desperation, hasn't pitched a second inning. And if he pitches a second inning, is he available in a game three? And even if he is available in a game three, how effective is he?
Yeah.
So I need to extend that game as much as possible. It's a tie game with either two outs and nobody on or two outs and a runner on first. Those are the two scenarios where Carlos Mendoza needed to get Phil Maton's ass out of the game, and he did not, and he failed. And of all the moves people can criticize, and we'll hear from you, that's the one that jumped out at me the most.
We do have a Mets lineup, which is worth noting because you were just discussing Pete Alonso.
All Let's right. First all of all, let me give you some guesses. Don't just give me the lineup.
Okay.
Pete Alonso is batting fifth.
No.
Pete Alonso is batting fourth.
Yes.
He moved him up.
How
about that?
That's right.
I really want Jesse Winker in the lineup, so please tell me that Jesse Winker is in the starting lineup for the New York Mets.
Yes.
Yes! Right. So J.D. Martinez is sitting.
Yeah.
All right, give us the rest of the lineup. Go ahead.
All right, here we go. Leading off, Francisco Lindor at short. Mark Vientos bats second at third. Brandon Nimmo in left bats third. Pete Alonso at first bats cleanup. Iglesias, Jose Iglesias bats fifth at second. Jesse Winker bats sixth, DHing. Starlin Marte in right bats seventh. Tyrone Taylor in center bats eighth. Francisco Alvarez bats ninth in catches with Jose Quintana on the hill. And I do like this little nugget from the Mets. We never see this in their lineup card. They like throwing a little stat out there. 0.74 ERA in his last six regular season starts. So there was like kind of, hey, don't kill us for starting Quintana tonight.
Well, no, Quintana's pitched well. He didn't pitch well in that start against the Brewers last weekend, right. But he had a scoreless streak that I think eventually got to about 23 and a third innings or whatever it ended up at. Quintana's all over the place. Like, his season this year has been very up and very down, and that's why, you know, you could pretend and be positive. Yeah. I wasn't referring to you, Tommy. But maybe I was.
Positive Tommy's not a pretender. He's a contender.
Okay. So you're confident. You believe that it's the...
Tonight?
He's going to be lights out.
I believe in everybody in that lineup tonight, and I believe in this situation. Okay. They've been here before, Teague. They know how to respond.
Alonzo?
Everybody. Okay. Alonzo.
Well, you already predicted 3-for-5 with a home run. 3-for-4 with a home run. The truth about Quintana, much like this game, it is a complete coin flip. Because Jose has had some very good starts. We saw a lot of them in September. He's had a lot of mediocre starts. Managing a Game 3 or a Game 5 in the DS or a Game 7 in an LCS or World Series, very different. You don't have time for a lot of patience. I approve of that lineup. So I'm good with that lineup. I'm glad that Jesse Winker is in it. All right, let's get to some of your calls. Steve in Middletown, New Jersey. Steve.
Steve.
Afternoon, gentlemen.
What's up, man?
Afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Always good. Wonderful.
I guess a criticism and a point on the pitching decisions yesterday.
Yes.
Stanek pitched 11 pitches.
Yeah.
And went through them like a hot knife through butter.
Mm-hmm.
I felt he should have been brought out for the eighth inning, see what he can do. And if that failed, he could have brought Diaz in for a four or five out save.
I don't think he was ever going to go to Diaz for that extended amount of time. I think the only shot he ever had with Edwin Diaz was to face three batters because of the workload that he's had over the last couple of days. So I don't think Diaz getting more than three outs was ever an option.
Well, again, and then if you shut him down yesterday, you had 2 days off to rest your pitching.
No, I get that, but what if you don't? What if he doesn't shut him down? Is he even available in a winner-take-all game three? But let me address the Stanek thing. Ryan Stanek was very, very good in the one inning he pitched. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But now it's the top of the order, and Mendy even said this after the game. This is where I'll defend him. Stanek relies on fastballs, fastballs up. Do you really like the Jackson Chourio matchup? I agree. I didn't like that matchup. And I think sometimes with a reliever, especially the reliever who only twice this season has pitched more than one inning, Ryan Stanek is a one-inning reliever. Very rarely does he pitch more than one inning. And by the way, the only time he did it as a Met, he didn't pitch well that day either.
Mm-hmm.
He was mostly eating up innings because the Mets were getting their ass kicked. They lost the game 7-0. I think that when you get a scoreless clean inning out of Ryan Stanek, here's what you do. You point to the sky, you say thank you to the baseball gods, and you move the hell on.
Right.
So that critique of Mendy, I understand it, I respect it, I completely disagree with you. Let's go to Greg in Manhattan. Hey, Greg.
Hey, how you doing? I'm glad you brought up the whole pitching discussion because that's what I was calling in. You covered it off a little bit. But I'll tell you, I completely disagree with your analysis from the last caller. How do you not bring Stanek back in? If you were watching that baseball game last night, what were the Brewers doing? They couldn't hit the hard stuff. Everyone that was throwing 96, 97, 98, 99. They had one, two runs in. They
because but Jackson Chourio is not Joey Ortiz. You know what I mean? It's a different hitter you're facing.
Look what happened when you brought soft throwing, that little soft throwing Matten into the game. Even before he threw the home run, he looked like he was throwing cream puffs up there. Mendoza should have been fired on the spot.
Oh, my God. Whoa! He should have been fired on the spot! These kinds of managing bullpen decisions are the fun baseball discussion.
This is what makes or breaks success, and especially in the postseason. We saw it with the Braves series. That wasn't even the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
Once you got off Schwellenbach, the bullpen is the one that was the problem issue. It's getting off of the starter is the hardest thing in baseball. And if you do it early and you get in the team bullpen, now the manager of the opposing team has to really work.
But here's the other decision you got to make. So Sean Manaea came out of the game after 5 innings and 86 pitches.
Yeah.
I thought he was done. So I get the idea of, hey, you got to push him further. There aren't a lot of great bullpen arms. You got to find a way to get 12 outs. He's your ace. I've heard that a lot. Well, he's your ace. He's your ace just because we said he's the ace. He's not good third time around the batting order. Those are just facts. He's not good when his pitch count passes 85 or 90. Those are facts. So having Manaea come out for the sixth inning just because we call him the ace to face Willy Adames is a bad move. It just is. Like, I get it. I wish starting pitchers went deeper into games. But sometimes you got to take it on a case-by-case basis. And as I was sitting there last night, and he got out of that fifth inning. And remember, they scored a run in that fifth inning. Bryce Terang laid off with a double. The guy's been unbelievable. And he got out of that inning after he got Contreras to ground out. I said to myself, I think I said it out loud, but again, my wife was sleeping. I said, all right, thank you, Sean. I appreciate it. Because, not because I had confidence in the bullpen, but because he was done.
He did what he could do.
And yeah. Just because you call him an ace doesn't make him an ace. He's not an ace. He's our ace because we all feel the need to claim someone as your best pitcher. And he is their best pitcher. Right. But just because you're a team's best pitcher doesn't mean you're an ace.
Yeah, because that's an earned thing through consistency over years and kind of peer recognition. Peer and league recognition.
And also,
That's how you become an ace.
Sure. And also being reliable third time around the batting order or with a pitch count above 90.
Right.
That's not who Sean Manaea is. So I thought Mendy was right. This is why all these bullpen decisions, they're so easy to go through. And I have my opinions on the mistakes. If this offense would have scored more runs, maybe we're not talking about this. Asking your bullpen to protect a one-run lead and getting 12 outs with Edwin Diaz not being available to get more than three of them?
Yeah.
That's a tough task right there. JR in Somerville. What's up, JR?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Going good.
We're good, man. What's up?
All right. Got to say this. Pete Alonso is compromised by his own free agency, and it may cost this team. Effectively, he hired Boris. He actively talks about the need to do the home run derby for money, and he even accused the MLB of changing baseball to affect his own free agency. So that stuff is all coming, you can see that in the way he's hitting.
Well, why is all of that stuff, but in fairness, because all of that stuff has some levels of truth to it, so I'm not like arguing with you. What does that have to do with him slumping right now?
Because he always talks about free agency, his swing decisions. I mean, I wouldn't take you down a rabbit hole, because there's actually a damning stat about Pete Alonso.
Give me the damning stat. What's the damning stat?
All right, on Fangraphs, if you scroll down low enough to plate discipline, there's something called Z swing percentage, right?
Okay, yeah.
It's the percentage that you swing the bat at when the ball's in the zone.
Okay.
All right, he's always been around 70%. He's well below that now. He's looking at pitches in the zone, and, a slugger needs to have a rational confidence. They need to have that the brute power hitters need to scare pitchers.
Yeah.
And in this day and age, you can't let pitchers go by without swinging at them.
That's fine, JR, and I think that's an interesting stat, and it's a great point, but I will ask you the same question again. What does that have to do with what he said about baseballs being changed? What does that have to do with hiring Scott Boras? What does that have to do with the home run derby? Those things you may not like. You may not like that he fired his longtime agent for Scott Boras. I certainly didn't. You may not like that he wants to be in the home run derby every single year. You may not like that he made a comment of a conspiracy theory that when pitchers are free agents, they juice the balls, and sluggers are free agents, they unjuice the balls. You don't have to like those comments.
Yeah.
But what does that have to do with him being timid at the plate and slumping right now? Does it have anything to do with it, Tiki?
I'm trying to think. I mean, because when I look at, the stats, and yes, he did put me in a little bit of a rabbit hole, his O swing percentage, which is percentage of pitches a batter swings at outside of the zone, is lower than his career average. It's basically on par with what he's been the last couple of years, last year.
And that's a good thing. And we've seen that because he's drawing walks like he did the other night.
Exactly right. Now, you go to the Z swing percentage, ball's in the strike zone and he's not swinging at it.
Mm-hmm.
That puts you behind counts, especially when you have, again, I'll go back to Schwellenbach because he was 0-2 on every damn batter that he faced, it felt like, or at least 1-2 for most of that game, before they got into the bullpen. And so I don't think it's saying anything other than that he's taken a more disciplined, or at least trying to take a more disciplined approach at the plate. And He's not swinging at bad pitches. He's just also not swinging at as many good ones.
So
that's what that's basically what this status
is
telling you.
So is the theory that Scott Boras got into his ear and said, hey, Pete, you want to get paid? You got to walk more.
No chance.
Is that the theory?
No chance.
Because all that other stuff about Pete, you don't have to like. I'm not going to sit here and defend it because I don't really care about it. You don't have to like the home run derby. You can mock him all day. I don't care. You don't have to like him changing his agent for Scott Boras. I want to know why he's not hitting. And I want to know why that stuff would be related to this stuff. Is he a human being who's pressing because he knows there's a lot of money on the line in free agency? Tiki, maybe that does happen to an athlete. Maybe he knows that.
Yeah, of course. But I don't. Guys who have been around that long, because he's been around for a while. It's not like he's in his second or third year, fourth year. He's been around for a while and had
2019?
Success. Yep. Exactly. He's had success. And so I feel like maybe it is pressure of the in those moments, but I can't explain it, to be honest with you. I'm also looking at his batting average, his expected batting average. He's right where he's right on where he is. Mm. He just is what he is. It's not like he's hitting the ball hard and getting caught. His expected batting average and batting average are basically exactly the same, you know, hundreds of points apart. No, thousands of points apart. So it's not like you know, there's something that's skewed or hidden. He just is what he is.
Right.
And I think that's maybe the problem with a lot of fans when they look at Pete, is that this is just who he is.
Well, this is not who he is with the eye test, because the eye test tells you he has not been as impactful as he's been in the past. Hey, Yankee fans, I know you're feeling left out. Like, what the hell? What about us? What about us? I have great news around the Yankees. I have very exciting news. News that you may not know. A lot of Met fans have been complaining about the ESPN broadcast. They don't like the broadcast. Mm. They don't like Boog Shambi. He seems like a very lovable guy. They don't like Doug Glanville. They don't like in-game interviews. They don't like, you know, not seeing a play because they're too busy interviewing somebody. Well, Yankee fans, you're going to have your turn to be excited or complain about your broadcast. It was just announced who's broadcasting for the New York Yankees in their American League Divisional Series against the Kansas City Royals.
Let's hear it.
I'd be rolling torpedoes, get blunted with Rostis, and for a hefty fee, I'm on your record, like Bob Costas.
That's right. And I, for one, am very excited that Bob Costas is doing this.
You're excited? Feel these nipples!
But you know what's crazy? As excited as I am, the last time Bob did Yankee games, Yankee fans did not like America, didn't like Bob Costas.
Why?
They didn't like him!
We live in a culture that in many ways grows more stupid and graceless by the moment.
So I want Yankee fans to know Bob Costas is broadcasting your games on TBS. Sean, would you like to comment on behalf of all Yankee fans?
I got to be honest with you. Everybody zigs, I zag on Bob Costas. I love when he calls Yankee games.
There you go.
I love Bob. So it's just I worked with him when I was at NBC. So I think he's awesome.
Look. Does the story time with Bob Costas, as you're like, does that wear on you? No doubt about it. I absolutely got angry 2 years ago. But for me, Bob Costas is like the last thing left in baseball that gives me 90s Yankee vibes. So when he calls a game, I channel my youth and I get nostalgia out of it. So I'm okay with it, but just the story time's going to get cut down a little bit.
I love the story times. I really do.
Oh, it's enough.
Now, the problem Bob is facing is that it's tougher to do story times these days with the pitch clock. And this is our first postseason with the pitch clock with our teams playing. I don't know if you guys realize that, because last year, and I think most of New York didn't watch the playoffs last year because the Yankees and the Mets weren't there. Like, you barely watched. Maybe you watched very, very casually. This is the first time where the pitch clock is involved in the postseason, and I've certainly noticed it over these first few games against Milwaukee. The games fly. So one of the negatives that Bob's going to face is if he's telling us a story about the late 70s Yankees-Royals rivalry, which I can't wait to hear. I wasn't old enough for it. I can't. Give it to me, Bob.
Yeah.
Give me all the stories.
It is worth monitoring. If Bob Costas is calling the games, you will get hammered playing the do a shot every time he mentions the Pine Tar game situation.
And what's wrong with that?
Well, I like getting drunk, so that's fine. But he's going to do it a lot.
I like stories. Tiki, don't you like stories about baseball's past?
There's nothing wrong with a story.
No. Yeah. Here's the problem with a story. And it's no different than interviewing somebody with an out
stories?
In the night. I don't hate stories. I hate stories if a game is 2-1 in the sixth inning and I'm biting my nails. It's not time for me to go down memory road of the 70s. I want to know what you think about who's warming up in the pen and how the hell are we going to get 12 more outs.
What if he's already given you that?
Then lay it out. By the way, you're allowed to not say anything on TV.
It's hard to do.
It's not easy, man.
It's hard to do.
We'll come back with more of your calls. Met fans, are you nervous, giddy, or excited for tonight? 888-808-1019. And for the Yankees, we now know the opponent. We also now know that the two teams we were all arguing about for the last few weeks, who scares you more, the Orioles or the Astros? They're both dead. It's now become the American League Central Invitational. Is this the roadmap to a World Series? What a pathetic, lifeless, and really disgusting performance by the Frogs in Baltimore, Maryland. I mean, that really was embarrassing. The big, bad, tough Baltimore Orioles trying to build off a great regular season last year, build off of their horrible postseason disappointment a year ago, their great success against the Yankees this season. They felt like they were big brother, and they got embarrassed by the little tiny upstart Kansas City Royals. I think the entire city of Baltimore should obviously be ashamed of that performance. I think they are. I think they've all been humbled and completely embarrassed.
Good thing they have the Ravens.
That's true. They can easily pivot. Hey, Lamar Jackson's awesome.
Right.
Now it's Kansas City's turn. And I know this isn't fair, but it's real and it's true. Because the one thing about baseball, and I've been preaching this for 2 years, so certainly I'm on the bus of just get to the playoffs, anybody can win a championship.
Right.
I've had that argument with Sean off air and on air, and last year, before the playoffs started, I remember screaming at him that the Diamondbacks could win a World Series. They didn't, but they got to one. And Sean said, that's not true. Like, there are good teams and there are bad teams. It's not true that everybody can win a World Series. I hope that you have now been convinced that that is true, that as long as you're in the tournament, you can get hot and win it all?
No, because I was right. The Diamondbacks couldn't get through to that last...
They got to the World Series.
No, but the name of the game is winning it.
Okay. I think now when you look at the American League and you look at the Kansas City Royals, and they deserve a lot of credit. They've got a lot of good young talent on that roster. They have a pretty good pitching staff. Kudos to Matt Quartaro. Do you know who Matt Quartaro is?
The general manager.
He's the manager.
Generally speaking.
Tomorrow we're going to play a game here on Evan and Tiki, if Tiki's willing to play the game. You want to know the game?
What's the game?
Royal or Kansas City Royal?
Ooh.
You like that game?
Okay.
I like it.
It's either going to be a royal, like somebody who's a royal, not, you know what I mean? Like a king, a queen, a prince.
I think I have a better chance of knowing them.
I know. We got to go dig really deep on the Royals or royal. So Kansas City deserves a lot of credit, but when you look at the Royals and you look at the Tigers, the Guardians had a wonderful season. This is a disaster if the Yankees don't win the American League pennant. And I don't think I'm contradicting myself when I also say anything can happen.
Well, I was going to say, but you just said that any team could go on a run and upset the favorite in this case.
Yes.
Who's obviously the New York Yankees, given that the Detroit Tigers and the Kansas City Royals are now in the conversation.
Yes.
And obviously the Guardians as well. But still, it just feels like it got easier. I mean, everybody who I talked to about the playoffs, and yes, we're talking about the Mets, but when they finally leak over to the Yankees who aren't playing for a couple more days, it's, wow, that just got easier for them. It's just a common thought.
But it's also, they better win. They better win.
Of course they better win.
And I know they always better win.
Yes.
But now I think it's magnified even more. Fair or not. And I admit, it's sort of not fair because baseball's crazy and weird.
Yeah,
but they better win.
The last few years have proven that anything can happen. But you better win feels like a threat to the Yankees.
How about we start with this? They better not go out in the division series.
Huh.
I don't think division series, LCS, I think it's the same thing.
You're probably right, but the quicker it happens, their elimination, the bigger disaster it really is.
Well, of course. Look, I think that's always the case. If you lose earlier, it's worse. But this is the American League Central Invitational. When was the last time, I have the answer, when was the last time the Yankees lost to an American League Central team in the postseason?
The Tigers, Derek Jeter got hurt.
Good call. Sean, baseball guy over there. Right. Good call. But think about all the times since Cleveland multiple times, three times actually,
yeah.
17, 20, and 22. The Minnesota Twins.
Right.
Like
whenever.
Whenever. For who cares the year?
Right.
Like, it's unfair, but it's true. And that's what I'm trying to tell you. It is unfair because baseball's weird. It doesn't make sense.
True.
You just got to be hot at the right time. But the reality is, if the Yankees aren't in the World Series, and we're talking about them losing a series to Kansas City, Cleveland, or Detroit, you know what's coming next.
Right.
The manager's got to go. The GM's got to go. And this season was a colossal failure.
True.
This isn't the Astros.
I also think it will be determined by how it looks. If it's an ugly... getting swept, mm-hmm. that obviously what you say is likely to come to fruition, at least from a fan standpoint. But it's also the year of anything can happen, or the seasons of anything can happen. And while you're confident in some of these, for instance, starting pitchers for the New York Yankees, are you confident in all of them?
No.
Are you confident that they're all going to go out and just be aces? I mean, you hope that Gerrit Cole is, because he's a Cy Young winner, he's a stud, and he has been for most of his career. But after that, it's kind of like, all right, let's go. Well, let's get a good one.
Cheeky, I'll give you a great example. I'm projecting this opening round series. I think the Kansas City Royals have the starting pitching edge in Game 2 and Game 3. And I'll tell you the matchups just so you know what I'm talking about. Game 1 is Gerrit Cole against Michael Wacha. And Michael Wacha's put up some great, great success. We can't use Wacha in the Royal game.
No.
Damn it, he's out.
Oh, Wacha.
Wacha's has pitched well against the Yankees.
I would have gotten that one, by the way.
You would have.
Only because of that Wacha thing.
Yeah, that's an easy one. That's an easy one. But Gerrit Cole, obviously, you're going to give the edge over anybody. Game 2 is Carlos Rodon against Cole Reagans. A lefty? As good as Reagans? As well as he's pitched? I mean,
Prince Cole Reagans?
Like, would you agree the Royals have the edge in that game, starting pitching-wise?
Yeah, I am already scared of Monday. We haven't even played Saturday.
Now, let me get to Game 3. Game 3 is either going to be Clark Schmidt or Luis Gil against Seth Lugo.
Yeah.
I mean, Seth Lugo is a Cy Young contender.
Yeah.
Like, I would give the Royals the edge.
Well, versus the Yankees.
Absolutely. I give the Royals the edge in two of those three games. So
now, who is there? Will they turn it right back around, or... Meaning the Royals, because we were speculating about this with the Yankees yesterday or 2 days ago, whatever it was, how they could potentially get to a four-man rotation and save Gerrit Cole should it come down to a do-or-die game 5 or first game of the next round of the championship series. So what are the Royals likely to
do? I'm just going to give you a baseball opinion because I don't know what Matt Quartaro is thinking. Mm-hmm. Michael Wacha pitches well in Game 1. There's no doubt he comes back for Game 4. I would very much want Reagans to come back and pitch Game 5 and get him facing the Yankees twice. Their other starter is Brady Singer. To me, he'd be the odd man out. Mm. But that's how I think the Royals will manage it. But the Royals have a good rotation. Look, it's very different than Detroit, who has one starter, and that's basically it. Like, the Royals have a good rotation, but that doesn't matter. Like, what I'm saying about how dangerous Kansas City is, or what you're saying about how dangerous Kansas City is, like, that's all true and fine. The expectation game is now completely different. Yeah. They're still the Royals.
74-75 versus the entire league except for the White Sox.
Who's that?
The Royals.
Okay, great. What's the Tigers' record? Same thing.
Tigers are 76-73 without facing the White Sox.
Okay.
And Royals are under 500 without the White Sox.
But guess what? That Tiger team that you just mentioned just swept the Astros, and that Royal team you just mentioned just swept the Orioles.
True. Right. And the Yankees are the only team to lose to the White Sox by double digits this year.
So I think what you just said is, like, it doesn't mean anything.
I'm just giving you the stats if you want to feel good and make you feel bad.
Well, I mean, the problem is history means nothing. Even, like, immediate history means nothing. What just happened a month ago or a few weeks ago means nothing in Major League Baseball, as we've seen over the last couple of years. It plays itself out differently in the postseason.
Right now, we are about 51 hours away from first pitch at Yankee Stadium Saturday night. So we got about 2 days out. We have an opponent. The bracket's been cleared. We know it's Yankees Royals for the first time since they were real blood rivals. Right now in this moment, are the Yankees going to advance to the American League Championship Series?
Yes. Okay.
Tommy Lugauer, positive Tommy. Are the Yankees defeating the Kansas City Royals and advancing to the American League Championship Series?
100%.
100%. Sean Morash, are the New York Yankees defeating the Kansas City Royals and advancing to the American League Championship Series?
Yes, but they lose Game 1.
That's a scare, man.
Wow.
Boy, this place will panic if Gerrit Cole loses Game 1. And then, like I mentioned, I think the Royals have the starting pitching edge in Game 2 and 3.
Doing a show over the weekend?
Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll be previewing the Giants and Seahawks.
Yeah, nice. But will you talk at all about the Yankees?
We'll see. If the neighbor's calls run dry.
Well, let's see how angry he is about what happened.
Yeah, actually, it's Saturday morning. I won't be on after.
All right, neighbors is not practicing again today. I don't know if we said that, so he's very unlikely.
Trending the wrong way. So you think the Yankees advance, but they're going to get a scare in this series?
Yes.
Yeah.
I actually think they get more of a scare in this series than they will in the ALCS.
Yeah, so I'll give you a prediction, and I hate to just make this universal, but it kind of proves my point that the expectation is the Yankees cannot lose when everybody's picking them. Mm-hmm. And you can go down the line with everybody on this radio station. I'm pretty confident everyone's going to pick the Yankees. And I don't think it's a hometown thing. I don't think it's a, hey, we just want to be positive. I think it's a reality thing.
They're just, you know, the pitching, you mentioned the Royals may have an edge, but as a team, they're just better. The Yankees are better.
No, I get you.
And so they should win this series.
I think I'm with Sean, but I'll push it up a notch. I think we're sitting here for a game five next weekend. I think this is a full-fledged, scary battle. Kind of reminds me of 2 years ago against Cleveland, as you recall.
Cole loses game one, wins game five.
I don't know if he loses game one. I'm not sure. I don't know about that one.
I didn't say Cole was losing game one.
Okay. Yankees lose a Cole start and win the second one.
I could see it.
I don't know how it goes. I just think we're seeing a fifth game. I'll go that far.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
I think we're going all the way to a fifth game, and you guys will survive it. And that's exactly the Cleveland series. If you guys recall, they split at Yankee. They went down 2-1 in Cleveland, the Josh Naylor game, right? Mm. Then they came back, evened it up 2-2, and then I think Nasty Nestor pitched game five, and they won game five. Game five is a fog. Because
didn't Cole pitch game five and win game five?
I don't know. You told me my kid was in a hospital. I was literally in a hospital with my youngest son, Spence, and the game was like delayed by rain. Wasn't that what it was?
Game one was with the Tanaka. Wasn't that
Tanaka?
No, I'm thinking of the pandemic. They had a big rain delay versus the Guardian.
No, I'm talking about 2022.
I know. I'm losing track because they played him so frequently. They had a big rain game with Tanaka.
I'm telling you because I left the hospital as the Yankees were clinching the series against Cleveland, that game five. I remember leaving. I was so happy. My son was okay. Everything was good. Yeah, that was scary. You remember that, Loogie?
I remember you, that one I don't remember, but I do remember you scoring a baseball game when one of your sons was born.
That's different.
Was that Jed?
It was Cortez, by the way.
No, so he's right. During the pandemic series of 2020, they had rules back then. So my wife was giving birth to young Spencey, and you could not leave the hospital. You could not leave the room. If you left the room, you're not allowed back. So I'm going to stick with my wife.
Yeah,
so
of course.
I missed about 4 or 5 days I was with her, and I had nothing to do. Like, literally, she's like, you got nothing to do other than being there for support. So I didn't just score the Yankee game. I scored every baseball playoff game because I had nothing to do. I scored the White Sox. I forgot who they were playing.
So is this, like, cathartic to you?
It's relaxing.
Like, scoring a game is just, well, how? Does it, like, make your mind at ease?
Yeah, it's like smoking a cigar after relations.
No. You smoke a cigarette after relations. A cigar is when you clinch like the ALCS. You rip a heater after.
Whooping. Right. Good correction there, Loogie.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know.
By the way, Sean.
He's never done it.
No, I haven't.
Neither. Sean, you said the Yankees are going to lose game one?
I did.
Garrett's pitching?
Yeah.
So I guess Yankee fans have been naughty this year because Garrett's going to give them a lump of Cole.
Oh, look at you.
Nah, it's got to be quicker.
You're coming along. You're
too
coming
long delivery?
Along,
Loogie.
Yeah, too long.
Oh, all right,
Loogie's coming along.
It's minor league stuff, but you got to be a little quicker to the point.
That's all good. It was good, though.
You've created a monster, Sean.
The problem is he set it up so we were expecting it.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. Like you got to not expect it.
Yeah, you tail that one out for so long. We're waiting for the dunk.
Sorry, I'm nervous. Sorry.
Yeah. It's okay.
Kansas City's going to have to be more witty than that. You know.
Got it. I got it. I like the cadence there. I got it.
Very nice, Sean. Very nice. Let's go to Carmelo in Freehold, New Jersey. What's up, Carmelo?
Hey, guys. For as long as I can remember, the most real deal best hitters in the game had a batting average over 300, an on-base over 400, and slugged over 500. And anybody who can log into baseballreference.com and look up Pete Alonso's career splits, scroll down to clutch stats, you'll see that when the lead is 4 runs or less, when there's 2 outs, runners in scoring position, or it's late in the game, he slugs under 500, he gets on base less than 360, and his average is less than 250. That's who he's always been.
I disagree.
And it's not a binary of...
I disagree, though, because I mean...
We love him or hate him, or he's good or he's bad. The numbers are always what they've been.
But Carmelo, numbers are numbers, so I can't, like, disagree with numbers. Right. But you're a Met fan. You've watched him for years. He was never this. He was never this.
No, this is. I'm not denying that this is the worst season he's had.
Yeah.
But as far as his clutch stats, and again, the numbers are there. It's his career stats year by year. They're consistent every year in the clutch.
But you know why?
Yesterday I invoked Carlos Delgado and John Olerud because consistently those guys in the clutch set the standard for Mets first baseman. And he's just not there. He's never been on that level throughout his career. And as much as I want him to have a big postseason, he's been consistent his entire career in terms of clutch.
But Carmelo, I think that is misleading. I do. And I did this on the Rico a few months ago. I would never do this on this show, but I'll tell you what I did without doing it. I went through every home run Pete Alonso hit this year.
Mm-hmm.
Gave you the exact situation, everything about the game.
Yeah.
And Pete Hoffman and I would say, clutch or not clutch?
Mm. And how many of them were clutch?
Well,
of the 38.
This season?
Yeah,
this not enough, which is my point. I'm not defending this season, but here is my point. If you had a home run in the first inning, is that a clutch home run?
I mean, it's not clutch, but it's tone setting.
Yeah, it's big though.
It's different than clutch, but it's in the same category.
Well, that's why I think
it's
numbers,
not meaningless. It's 8-2 in the eighth inning hitting home run.
It can be the difference in the game, especially when it's the top of the first inning and before your opponent ever hits.
I think it's closer to the clutch than people want to give it credit for because it disrupts the starting pitcher. So maybe changes the game for the opposing team.
I agree with you. That's why those numbers are deceiving. Because that, to me, is a clutch home run. If a guy, I remember how many times Mike Piazza would hit a first inning home run and set the tone for a game.
Yeah.
Those home runs matter. I'll ask Met fans this question. Pete Alonso's batting cleanup tonight. If Pete Alonso, it's a 2-run home run in the first inning, is that clutch? I mean, that's a dumb question.
It's not clutch, but it's exciting.
I mean, it's important, bro.
It's tone setting. Of course it's important.
It's hugely important.
But it's not clutch. To me, clutch is when game is on the line. You have to make the play, and you make the play.
You don't think sometimes the game's on the line early in a game?
It depends.
I tell you, his at-bat yesterday in the first inning was a very big spot. And it didn't work. He grounded into a double play, and he tripped over a bat. That was a huge spot in the game. So sometimes these numbers, because it's so easy, I do it too. We go on Baseball Reference. Let's look it up. This is going to prove something. And numbers tell us a lot, but they don't tell us everything. And I do not believe Pete Alonso has been this dog of unclutchness his entire career. No. I believe this season, for whatever reason, whether it's pressing or something else, he hasn't been the same guy. And going into a winner-take-all game three tonight, they need him.
Of course they do.
They need that goofy ass.
We started our show talking about needing him. The question is it actually going to happen?
You can rewind on the Odyssey app, too, if you've missed anything on this program. Let's go to Anthony in Harlem. Hey, Anthony.
What's up, boys? Sitting in my office watching you guys on SNY app. You look fabulous.
Beautiful. Appreciate it.
I want to talk about Mendy. Last night was kind of frustrating because he managed very conservatively. When the Mets were up 3-1, I felt like you had to scratch out a few more runs to keep the pressure on the Brewers and kind of keep the crowd out of it. You remember when Marte stole that base and they reviewed it and he was at second base with two outs? Remember that point in the game?
Yes. He was on second base with nobody out, actually.
Yeah.
Nobody out. And I know the nerds say you never bunt because statistically it doesn't work. But that's a situation where if you bring him, put him over third base, and you make it 4-1 on a sack fly or a ground out, they were at home in an elimination game pressing. So I really hope tonight he doesn't wait for the 5-hit inning and he manages aggressively and just kind of puts the pressure on them.
I want to address that because I think you're half right but half wrong. So he's referring to a situation in the fourth inning with a runner on second and nobody out and Tyrone Taylor up. There was a sequence two innings later that was more conducive for bunting. They had first and second nobody out with Tyrone Taylor up. And at that point, Milwaukee had just scored the run to make it 3-2. And the Mets had first and second nobody out with Tyrone Taylor coming up.
That's when you bunt.
That's when you bunt, in my opinion.
Now you put two guys in scoring position.
That's right. You have second and third one out for Francisco Alvarez and Francisco Lindor. And if you want to wick Lindor again, you've got Jose Iglesias. Actually, not again. That was the inning where they ended up walking him. So that's the moment to bunt. Now, the fair question one may want to ask is, does Tyrone Taylor bunt? Well, I do have an answer to that.
And?
He has had one sacrifice bunt in his major league career. But! I have a but! I've got a huge but. So name whoever you want that has a huge butt for this transition.
Joel Embiid.
Kevin Booth.
I was going Kim Kardashian. You're not allowed to do that anymore?
Only because Joel Embiid was just on my screen.
He thinks it, well, he does have a big ass, though. And that is true. And he is a big ass, so it fits well. Tyrone Taylor's one bunt this season in his career that was successful turned out that it helped the Mets win a game against the Kansas City Royals back in April. So he was asked earlier this season to lay a bunt down, got it down, and it directly led to the Mets winning a game against Kansas City. This point in the year, this moment in the year, I think it's good and okay to ask guys to do things like that.
Yeah, I mean, of course, why would he not want to do something like that? Because he'd rather have the stick in his hand and swing and be the hero?
You don't want to give an out away if you're the Mets. That's usually the adage, like, you don't want to give an out away. But
I'm saying if Mindy wants this to happen, if Mindy is using a small ball mentality here, Tyrone Taylor's not going to object.
No, no, Ty's going to listen to whatever the manager tells him.
Exactly.
That's why it comes down to the manager. Why didn't Mendy think of something like that with first and second, nobody out?
If you could pick one in October to have, a good successful sack bunt or a good moist bunt cake, which would you pick?
Is it the wild card round and is it a game three?
Let's go, I'll give you division series.
Does it win the series?
To put yourself
in position to win the series.
All I'm telling you is it's successful.
It's tough, man, because if the sack bunt doesn't lead to anything because Pete Alonso ends up screwing up or Jose Iglesias screws up, you get no love for that. But that bunt cake, man, you're going to get a lot of love for that.
Moist.
Right? Yeah.
And now it's cake
I never want my sack bunted, so.
You never want your sack.
888-808-1019.
Thank you.
Build that ass first.
Matt's in Manhattan. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Evan, TK, how are you guys doing?
Wonderful. What's up, man?
So I was went to Milwaukee for the game, and you know, I'm watching Pete, and I'm a lifelong Met fan. I really want to root for the guy, and so I thought about it, and I was like, you know what? Maybe Pete's just one of those guys that plays better when he has security. I mean, yeah, you got guys like Aaron Judge, right? Contract year. What does the guy do? Breaks the damn home run record. Yeah.
Right.
But maybe Pete needs that security.
It's possible, and you know,
maybe.
I think that Joe used to say this all the time. I couldn't disagree with him more. But Joe would say, give me a guy in a contract year, bro. And I'd always tell him, yeah, there are certain ones that jump out at you that they were amazing in contract years. But what about all the guys that don't perform in contract years?
Yeah, because there's a lot.
More than not.
Yeah.
Alex Bregman in Houston didn't exactly have the greatest year. Contract year. Cody Bellinger 2 years ago. Contract year. Then he had a great year in a contract year. Juan Soto, wonderful contract year. Aaron Judge, wonderful contract year. That's why when we eventually, not today, have the discussion about Pete Alonso's future, it can't be this emotional, I'm pissed off and angry discussion. It has to be a rational discussion. And I think what Pete has done for the future is he's eliminated anybody, including myself, being comfortable giving him a 6-year contract. That's out. I would have made that argument back in March. In fact, I did. I would have said, give him a 6-year deal.
Right.
Sometimes seasons have consequences. And certainly there are consequences to this season.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you can't have him on the team. It just means,
He didn't prove that he's consistently trustworthy in every moment that you need him to be. Like Aaron Judge did in that season, even though he wasn't great in the postseason, but he wasn't paid for that. But I think Pete Alonso, I mean, it's an interesting point that he makes. Like some guys are very comfortable in a situation because their contract is what it is. They know exactly what it is. They know exactly where they stand and the hearts of their owners and in the minds of their teammates. And it's easier to perform.
Right.
And then when there's pressure, like, oh, this is threatened. I got to really perform in order to maintain this. It becomes harder to just focus on doing what you always do. And so, I mean, we talked about this earlier about him maybe thinking too much. He doesn't think when he's playing the field. You see it. Like, he reacts, and his reactions have gotten pretty damn good for a first baseman. But at the plate, it's like he's frozen at times. And I think that Z, whatever statistic he was talking about, that Z swing percentage of balls in the strike zone that he's not swinging at, that tells you it. He's thinking too much.
Yeah.
Instead of just reacting, balls in zone, put bat on it.
Yeah.
He's not doing that as much as he should be.
Don't forget, today is Thursday, so coming up in exactly 40 minutes, we will hear from Bad Tiki. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, you will have an opportunity to win New York Yankee tickets. You will know it is your time to call when you hear a certain sound.
All rise.
That's it. That's coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. More of your calls also at 888-808-1019. And to my fellow Jet fans, I have a very, very important message for you about the head coach of this team, Robert Saleh.